we do have the Minister for Housing, Mick de Brenny, and Queensland's First Nations advisor, Mick. Now, is it Gooda?
Gooda.
And also with Mick Gooda, he has been appointed to this role, but he is also a Queensland, he's a human rights advocate as well. So I've got two very lovely gentlemen in here. Guys, you're very much early birds flying in. You're heading up to further north. So what are the plans? What are you going up there for?
I'll kick off. Good morning, Mark. Thanks, everyone, for having us. Thanks for joining me this morning, Mick, too. So we arrived in Cairns yesterday and we're heading off to Torres Strait Islands today. And we'll be mainly continuing our conversations with community leaders. We're having meetings today with Mayor Vonda Malone and Mayor Fred Geller, respectively, up there about the implementation of Australia's first Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander housing action plan. So I want to acknowledge Mick Gooda's work on the development of that plan, which is really working with 16 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across Queensland to develop ways that we can help ensure that we reduce overcrowding in our homes, but also that we start to shift decision-making away from Brisbane and Canberra back into the hands of local communities so that they're in control of those really important outcomes that come from having quality housing and enough housing for everybody and housing that's secure.
And also housing that's suitable for the areas?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the local housing plans that Mick's been working on are really key to that, Mick.
Okay, Mick Gooda, I'll just bring you to the microphone at the moment. You've been very much instrumental in organising this. So what's been your actual role in getting this organised?
Just wander around with people.
I think you're understating your importance there.
A lot of it is that, talking to people and building relationships, because it's those good relationships where we can have... we've had some pretty tough conversations both ways with the community, with us. We talked about our shared commitment to housing. On one hand, the state government will provide good housing for people in need. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are obviously the most needy in this state. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, people will pay rent, be good neighbours and look after the property. And not one person objected to that concept of a shared commitment. So we started with those sort of conversations. And now the minister last year put $40 million on the table. And we used that $40 million as an exercise to start getting the communities involved in decision-making around how to first split that money between the 19 communities. But then once they worked out the allocation, they went away and developed what they wanted to do in each of their communities. So they knew they had a figure to work with. We're doing it that way, even with a small amount of money like $40 million across 19 councils, has produced outcomes that we could never do.
Okay, because previously there was an agreement, I think it was between the federal and state governments, for funding for remote communities. Now, I understand that we've got Northern Territory, WA, they've signed up, but this is actually different, where you've got the decision-making there is basically down in Canberra or something. You've put the decision-making back in the hands of the councils.
Well, the council, the state and the federal government, there'll be the tripartite arrangement, but the most important decisions about what happens in the communities with the allocation is going to be the community's decision.
And how does that do? Is it with that, I will ask, that, so the councils and the local people on the ground talk to the communities, find out what's required, and then that is brought back to the table to you guys?
We take a view that that here's an allocation. You work with that, what you want to do in your community, and there's no rules around it. Like, you've got to build new houses. Some people want to build. We have this real issue of overcrowding, and as kids grow older in a house, there's nowhere for them to go because there's no houses for young people. They want to put granny flats in or something like that, which actually alleviates a lot of overcrowding. Now, we want the communities to make their own decisions about what they want to do with the money. And one community, for their share of the $40 million, are housing something like 16 lots of people.
Holy dooly.
Yeah.
And so it's not just new houses or here you go, this is what you got, you got to deal with it and everything else. It is community involvement on a very, very local level.
Absolutely.
I think what was really key about this fundamental change in how we approach dealing with the issue of adequate housing was that the measure of success of the previous program was the number of houses that we built. Now I think the new measure of success is the number of people that have safe and secure housing. And that's fundamentally different, because if you're just building a 3 or 4 bedroom house, that might not be what that local community needs. And now this is about, this new program is about saying, you guys work out what it is that your neighbourhood needs, what's suitable for the families there, and then let's work towards delivering that. Also, the delivery methodology is really, really improved now. It's really about saying to the local councils, you work with your local builders, you work with your local tradies. This is all also about economic development of those communities too. And so shifting that away from Canberra and Brisbane back into regional Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities is key to not only housing but jobs.
Yeah, I was about to say, because this opens up the possibility and opens up the avenues for apprenticeships, for training, on-site training. So this is actually bringing more experience, more work and better training into those communities. Instead of having something like fly-in, fly-out workers putting these houses up, this is something local.
Well, the best example I can give is that one community I went to, they said, because one of the principals, the minister, wanted in the action plan was communities should benefit in the delivery of housing programs. So that means jobs mainly. So this community said we had a building team here that could build 3 houses a year, and they said we're quite happy with that. But then it was decided they were going to get 10 houses, and so the community couldn't have the capacity to that, so they basically sacked those workers and brought outside workers in to build the 10 houses. But the community said we would have been happy to get the 10 houses over 3 years, didn't want them in 1 year, because we think the benefit of economic development and jobs is just as important as delivery of houses. And now they're going to have the capacity to do that.
So basically it is something that's going to be all-encompassing. So it's not just the housing, it's community, it's family, it's community, it's getting people trained up, it's doing a whole heap of things, and it's going to be housing that's suitable for that area, is, I think, also another big plus for that.
Well, they're going to have the say, and of course, you know, part of the deal will be things like quality. We don't want people to be living in low-quality houses that fall apart the first time anyone uses a shower or something. We've got to agree on those sort of things. But there's also some fundamental changes in policy. And for instance, the previous regime didn't recognise Cherbourg and Yarrabah as remote communities, so they weren't part of those other arrangements. What they failed to see is they just used some sort of definition of remoteness as the key thing in that, whereas we use a different thing. We talk about the housing markets. And even in Cherbourg, their housing market is completely different to Mergen, which is 10...
Yeah, which is 10 kilometres away, because that's an area that they
should live. The federal government, the ministers got... Minister White to agree to now include Cherbourg and Yarrabah in this program.
I'm also seeing that you've worked closely with a lot of groups, but this comes on top of projects already committed to build: Arakoon, Dimmaji, Hopevale, Woorabinda, Pomperow and Nappenham. Now, you're doing work in all those areas, which never seemed to occur in some of those areas before, as you just said.
Well, that's right. And in each and every one of those areas, local mayors with their own community have developed local housing plans. And that's through a process of having that conversation with people who live there about what it is that they need, whether they want a new home, whether they want granny flats, whether they want extensions. Mick mentioned before the flexibility that this has built in. And that's seeing real innovation, I think, being one of the key outcomes of this new way of doing things. And I'm really pleased and I'm really proud of what Queensland's established here. It really demonstrates that if you're genuine about giving Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Queenslanders a say in their future, that you can achieve extraordinary outcomes.
You can, and as you said, this is tripartite. So this is local, this is state, and this is also federal that have come in. I mean, something like this should be shouted from the rooftops and let people know about, but I think it is a great initiative. Now, from here, you're about to jump on the plane, so this is what they call a fly-in, fly-out visit. So you're heading up north up to the top of the Cape and the islands?
Up to Thursday Island, and another big part of the action plan is home ownership. So we're very keen on talking to Mayor Malone about, and we met with her and her council before Christmas. We've got some really innovative thinking around promoting home ownership on Thursday Island, particularly because there's a market aberration on Thursday Island that's driven by government, because the housing market is driven by government and locals just can't match that. Mm. There's no way locals can compete with what government can throw at housing, and it's probably the one place in Queensland. So we think we might, when we go into selling our houses, which we're committed to, there could be significant discounts for those people buying those houses, so that the local people can just buy them. Like if we put our houses up for sale now, some government agency will come in and pay at least $1 million for them. That's a going rate. The average price on Thursday Island is about $900,000. So the minister's driven it through cabinet to agree that there could be some other way of pricing housing that we sell to local people from a government perspective. So Mayor Malone's really interested in home ownership. So home ownership is a really big important part of this housing action plan.
This almost sounds like a localised version of the first home owners grant or scheme coming up.
That's better than that.
Yeah, it's a lot better than that. But we've got detail to work out, and there's some stuff. We think we can. We're targeting for this year 30. We think there's 13 families on Thursday Island that are ready to go into home ownership. So that's a target we've agreed with the council on Thursday Island. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, well, it's absolutely great. But look, one thing I will ask, and that is for both of you, please include Black Star Radio in any promotion that you've got, any information that you've got. We will definitely get it out there, because I think this is a great initiative that you guys are doing. It's something that I think needs to be recognised.
Can I say, there's a couple of things. This is the housing plan's right across Queensland. Yeah. It's not just in the communities. And those shared commitments are for everyone. And we think if we treat tenants with dignity and humanity, there's financial payoffs, like the reduction in repairs and maintenance. If people have a sense of ownership...
And pride.
And pride.
Yeah.
So one of the things we've done that's completely outside what we've done in public housing in Australia for the last 20 years is that we think housing, we know, we don't think, we know housing is a very important platform for closing the gap. If you don't have good housing, you're not going to close the gap on education or health or justice. So we're giving families a guarantee of a tenancy for a generation. They pay rent, good neighbours, and look after the property. They will be guaranteed a tenancy for a generation.
That is a very, very, I suppose, outstanding effort to do, because I think overcrowding or poor housing it is a big factor. But as you said, it's Australia-wide and Queensland-wide.
And while we don't have a target specifically for housing, we understand if you don't have good housing... The other things won't work.
And what you approach the local councils and as councils that then disseminate the information to the local community.
But even our staff right throughout Queensland, places like we're looking at Logan as and Ipswich is a trial area for a regional housing plan there, around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So we think having a good conversation with with our tenants and treating them with, like I say, dignity and humanity, there's payoffs.
There is, yeah.
Yeah, and I think what Mick's comments illustrate is that this isn't a program that has a time-limited sort of life, you know, that we're going to go and spend X amount of money for a couple of years and, you know, and everything's going to be all right after that. What this is about a complete and fundamental shift in the way that we approach housing in communities right across the state for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. This shift to local ownership, a transfer of decision making and control to First Nations Queenslanders is what this is all about. So it's not just here's what we're going to do for the next year or two. This is this is the way forward, and it's been developed through all of the conversations that we've had. We did a little bit of talking, but we did a stack of listening. Over a long period of time, and I think there's a real high degree of confidence amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elected officials, elders, and people on the ground as well about what the future looks like.
And so it looks like the future is going to be bright.
Indeed.
It certainly is. Okay, so for our two Micks, excuse me, I'm a bit of a pun there, but the Honourable Mick de Brenny and also Mick Gouda, thank you guys. I know you're very, very busy. This is fly in, fly out, but I do appreciate the time.
Thank you very much for having us.